In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stevens Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stevens Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. Legendary artist Van Morrison was already playing rock and roll and blues in clubs in Germany in the early 60s when he was just 17. But he actually started off as a musician playing skiffle when the skiffle craze hit the UK in the 1950s. He's returned to those roots on his upcoming album Moving On Skiffle, and that is due out March the 10th. From it, the album features our recent coolest song in the world, Streamline Train. We'll hear a portion of that now, followed by my chat with Van on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stevens Underground Garage.
Oh, that mean old fireman, good old engineer, mean old freight train, took my girl from here. I'm gonna leave in the morning, baby, on that streamlined train. Only one thing, mama, keep your mind off this man. Women in Chicago, shoot them, make me tired. A handful of gimme, a mouthful of much of blood. I'm gonna sleep in the morning, baby, on that streamlined train. And there's only one thing, mama, keep your mind off this man. Yeah, yeah. Streamline train, greenback dollar bills, loving proposition. I'll get somebody killed. I'm gonna leave in the morning, baby, on that streamline train. Well, there's only one thing, mama, keep your mind off this man.
Mighty Manfred here with you in Little Stevens Underground Garage, and it's a big day for our coolest conversations. Because joining us, we have singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist Van Morrison. Hi, Van. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
We're very honored to be chatting with you today. Our coolest song in the world this week is Streamline Train. It's off your upcoming album due out March the 10th, titled Moving On Skiffle.
That's it.
And we think it's skiffle, or at least I do, is a meshing of folk and blues and country and jazz, but like those forms of music from the early 20th century, you know, country blues, things from the 20s or the 30s and 40s even.
Yeah.
And then in the 50s, there's this big UK revival that provided wound up providing a music foundation for all sorts of bands and musicians that would come to prominence during the British invasion. And then you seem to be very uniquely poised to have started playing skiffle by virtue of your parents, especially your dad's love of music. And I really would like you to be able to tell us some about your upbringing and how your father's passion for music sort of fueled your development and aspirations, if you can.
Well, directly going to the skiffle point is, like, my father had blues records and country jazz and stuff like this. And so he had, like, Lead Belly recordings. So I used to listen to Lead Belly, and then Donegan came along, and he was doing Lead Belly, but he put a different twist on it. And he called it skiffle, but it was basically it was American folk music is what it was, but with a kind of a British twist. So already being aware of Lead Belly, then I could plug into that. So really, Donegan kind of opened the door for people like me, that time.
So I read that you were around 10 when you heard Lonnie Donegan's version of Rock Island Line.
Well, yeah, whenever it came out, yeah. They played it on the radio quite a bit also.
Well, did you ever see Donegan perform?
Oh, yes, many times. I worked with Donegan. I did this is my second skiffle album. I did an album with him and Chris Barber called it was Live in Belfast. So that was a while back. So I worked with Donegan and I got to know him pretty well.
Well, then you told him how you'd been a fan early on.
Yeah.
So your dad has this really immense record collection.
It wasn't immense. The house was very small. Our house was quite small. So
okay.
He just had a selection of the right kind of stuff. You know, blues, jazz, wasn't a large collection, but had certain people like Lightnin' Hopkins, Muddy Waters, you know, Harlan Wolf, Little Walter, Josh White. He had like, you know, big band jazz stuff and traditional Louis Armstrong, like Dixieland jazz and, you know, gospel music, Mahalia Jackson. So he had like a small collection.
Well, that's phenomenal. What got your father into all those different artists?
I don't know. He just liked the music. And he used to take me to a shop in Belfast. It was called Atlantic Records, believe it or not. So there's the guy that owned the shop was a guy called Sully Lipsitz. And that's where my father went to get the records. So that's where he got. That's where I first heard Lead Belly. So he used to take me when I was a kid. And so on Saturday mornings, we'd go there. You know, that was the connection. So there was a group of people who were kind of into this kind of scene, you know, a limited group of people who wanted to know about this kind of music at that time. So he was one of those people.
And so you hear the Lonnie Donegan's version of Rock Island Mine, you start hearing Skiffle stuff, and you what possessed you to want to start playing it?
Well, the thing about it was kind of like again, I mean, repeating myself, but Donegan kind of opened the door. He kind of showed the way that this was possible. When I was listening to the Lead Belly stuff, for instance, I at that point, I was just thinking about maybe I could be a folk singer and with just myself and a guitar. So I did there was an ad on television about that they're going to audition kids for BBC programs. So I was still in school and I went for an audition to the BBC with just myself and a guitar doing a folk song. And I never heard anything back. So Donegan kind of opened the way for us because he did it in a group format. Also, I was learning guitar from a book called The American Folk Guitar. It was written by Alan Lomax and Peggy Seeger. Well, Lomax and Seeger were actually in a skiffle group at that time. They were living in Britain.
Oh, really?
And Alan Lomax had a radio program in Britain at that time, and they were in a skiffle. And so was a guy called Ramblin' Jack Elliott, you probably heard of.
I've heard of him.
He was also in a skiffle group. So basically, that's what this music was. It was basically, you know, American folk music with a Donegan put another twist on it. And there was Donegan and a guy called Ken Collier, and there was the Vipers skiffle group, and they were putting their own kind of twist on it. So that's where I came in.
You mentioned being a kid and doing this audition for the BBC playing a folk song.
Yeah, I never heard anything back.
Never heard back. Well, they're lost, obviously.
Yeah. The BBC were advertising for kids to do kids' programs. They were advertising for this. So that's what the audition was about. And I did a folk song, but I never heard anything back.
What do you recall what song you did?
Oh, Hummingbird. Hummingbird. It was an old folk song. Hummingbird.
Well, tell me about the Sputniks, because I read that this was like a skiffle group you formed while you were still pretty young, like around 12, maybe 12, 13.
When I was in school, so I was still in school. And when we had this, you know, it was basically just with my school friends that we all lived in the same area. So, you know, it was a guy that lived next door to me and another guy who lived down the street and then a guy lived in the next street. So it was basically, it was a very local thing and we all went to the same school. So that's where it started. But I see you've got a question about, see, rock and roll was running parallel to that. So there was rock and roll group running parallel to that. So in order to go professional, you had to be like in either a rock and roll band or a show band, because they were the ones that in my part of the country that's who was getting work.
And you know what? I think you need to make a distinction there, explaining what a show band is, because I don't think people here, we don't have a conception of what that was.
Well, show band is kind of was a band that encompassed, you know, all kinds of music, and they basically were playing for dances, and they basically played the hits. You know, they played the current hits of the day, and they put their own, they put like a kind of a Las Vegas kind of twist on it, kind of thing. And that's why they were called show bands. So they put on a show, and they usually played at dances. So usually dances were like, most of the dances were 5 hours. They were 5 hour dances in those days. So that's what a show band was.
So were you around the time of, what is it, Georgia and the Monarchs? There's this recording, you're playing sax on Buzu. Were they a show band?
Yeah, yeah. That's when we were in Germany. Well, that started as a show band, and then it became a blues band because I was into blues, and some of the other guys in the band were into like Ray Charles and stuff like that. So it started off as a show band, and then a couple of guys and myself changed it to a blues band.
Well, what I want to point out to people is so cool to me is that this is like your first recording. You're actually playing saxophone on the recording, not singing.
No, the producer. I mean, you listen, in those days, man, you couldn't do what you want. You know, you had to do what people told you to do. I was just a kid. So
yeah.
The producer wanted the bass player to be the singer. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that we've never figured out yet, you know?
So. Well, talking about saxophone, now that was, I was reading, who was it? Jimmy Jufra Trio, the Train and the River. After hearing that, you decided you wanted to pick up the sax, or is that something you'd been wanting to play all along?
No, that's good. That's what, yeah. Well, no, I wanted to play it when I was, you know, I guess it was, I took lessons when I was 15. So alongside with the folk music and the Alan Lomax, you know, Book of American Folk Music guitar, along with that, I was learning sax at the same time with a guy that lived in my street. He was a jazz player, actually. And I was, that's who I was studying with at that time. And I got hold of a Jimmy Jufra album. I think it was an EP or something. And then I used to get, I remember Bill Black Combo. That was another influence, was the sax player with Bill Black Combo. I think it was a guy called Is Cannon. Is Cannon, I think it was.
That sounds right. I'm familiar with the Bill Black Combo in general, but I can't recall who was the sax player.
Yeah, I think it was him.
Yeah. So you were mentioned about skiffle and rock and roll kind of being on these parallel tracks. I was reading like the swinging blue jeans, I guess at the time were called the Blue Jeans, and they were still trying to do skiffle like in 62 until they went to Hamburg and got booed off the stage. And then they're like, oh, rock and roll's the way to go. Was there any one reason for kind of skiffle's decline on the UK scene as the 60s progressed, or is that it was just the attraction of rock and roll? And as you were talking about show bands,
I guess everything was changing so rapidly. It's like, you know, like today, I mean, everything changes so fast, and they didn't see anything then as, but I mean, they didn't even think rock and roll was going to last in the UK. They said that, oh, rock and roll is going to be over in a couple of years. You know, that's how they felt about it. And same with skiffle, but skiffle, like only certain people carried on, like Donegan carried on. He didn't stop, but he was, you know, there was only a few that could continue because he had lots of hits. Donegan had like dozens of hits in the UK, and he had a couple in the US. Rock Island.
That's right. Rock Island Line. And then the other,
Is your chewing gum loses flavor?
Yeah. On the bedpost, right. Well, so nearly 60 years later, why is now the time to release an album of skiffle tunes?
Because I like it. During like the King COVID period, there wasn't a lot going on, so you couldn't travel, you couldn't do gigs. Gigs were banned, you know, and so it wasn't. So all the time that you used to spend in traveling, in cars, planes, checking in and out of hotels. You know, all the time I kept myself busy, I was doing other things. Mm-hmm. So this was a project, and I was going back to my roots, basically. Yeah.
Well, 23 songs on the upcoming album. I imagine they're all favorites, but you had to do some culling, I'm sure. What criteria did you use in picking the songs that wound up on there?
Well, I went through a lot of material, you know, with like listening to Donegan, Ken Collier, Skiffle Group, Chris Barber, Skiffle Group, the Vipers, you know, Chas McDivitt. I mean, there's, you know, there could have been like a dozen albums, you know, but you have to, like, you know, somewhere you have to sort of compile it into some sort of order. And we, you know, we started off just looking at, you know, maybe 10 or 12, and then we just kept going. And I kept finding more tracks, you know, that I wanted to cut.
So is there enough, do you have enough tracks left over for Moving On Skiffle Part 2?
No, as a matter of fact, that's all of it.
Yeah, all right. Well, when and where did you record the album then?
Oh, it was recorded, some of it was recorded with my rhythm section in Cardiff.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot recorded in Cardiff, then some of it was recorded at Peter Gabriel's studio in near Bath, and some of it was recorded in Belfast.
Well, I mentioned our coolest song in the world this week is Streamline Train, written by Red Nelson. Blues guy first did it back in, like, in 1936. Did you come to the song from the Vipers, Vipers version?
No, Ken Collier version.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, there's several train-themed songs on the album, along with Streamline Train. There's Freight Train, Streamline Cannonball,
yeah.
A lot of train imagery and other tunes on there, like Worried Man Blues, I'm Moving On.
Yeah.
Certainly in the genre, there's a romanticism for trains. Do you have a special nostalgia or love for them yourself, for trains?
Yeah, I think I do, actually. But see, that was... There were a lot of train songs. And in fact, I think there was a documentary way back, maybe 20 years ago, about this particular subject in relation to train songs. So yeah, that's a big part of it. It's a big part of it, yeah.
Well, my notes for the song for Streamline Train mentioned the other musicians on it are Dave Keery on guitar, Pete Hurley on bass, Colin Griffin on the drums. And is it Alan Sticky Wicket on the washboard?
Sticky Wicket, that's him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Do they play on all the album's tracks?
Yeah, well, yeah, they play on all. Yeah, they play on everything, every track, yeah. Sticky used to be Dunnigan's washboard player.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, so you produced the album. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Did you do anything differently production wise, given that you were making a skiffle focused record, like maybe limit overdubs or go for as live a feel as possible? Or
overdubs were limited. Some of the BVs were done live,
mm-hmm.
and some of them were done as overdubs, but live, yeah, all the tracks are live. That kind of music, it has to be live, you know? You have to have, the tracks have got to be live. It doesn't work otherwise. Well, not for me, no.
So as you know, Van, this side of the Atlantic, we did not come up with Shakespeare, but we did come up with Hank Williams.
That's it.
And what I love so much about, well, his songwriting, his lyrics, is that so often, you know, he starts the first half of a couplet and intuitively, you know, what the next line is going to be or resolve with, but it never seems forced. It just always seems so natural, not try just the way it should be.
Yeah.
You do two Hank Williams songs on the album. We cover Cold, Cold Heart and I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry. I'm not aware of skiffle artists doing those tunes. Did somebody?
I don't know if they did those specific tracks, but skiffle artists did do Hank Williams tracks. I know they did. I saw the light, and I know that was a skiffle favorite. But yeah, they did. They did Hank Williams, definitely. Yeah.
Well, why did you choose to include a couple of Hank Williams tunes?
Because it was all part of it's all part of the American folk music genre.
Yeah. So you mentioned the Vipers several times, and I was not familiar with the song "No Other Baby," and I've since found out that Paul McCartney covered that too. But
well, yeah, well, sort of the Vipers covered it. It was originally done by Dickie Bishop and his sidekicks. Dickie Bishop worked with Dunnigan, and also he worked with Chris Barber. I actually did a gig with Dickie Bishop in the 90s. And Chris Barber in Croydon, we did some skiffle tracks. So yeah, Dickie wrote that song.
Wow, that's very cool. That Vipers version, man, I mean, conjures both like Buddy Holly and even a bit of the Everly Brothers to me. You know, it sounds pretty close to rock and roll music to me anyway, that version. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, it was, you know, moving on means like, okay, we're going to do something with this and you know, move it forward. That's what the whole point is, you know?
Well, you do a version of This Little Light of Mine, and that dates back to, I guess, like back to the 20s and, you know, in the 60s, an anthem for the civil rights movement. Sam Cooke did a version back then.
I did that song, and I was doing that in 1966 as This Little Light of Mine. And then I hadn't done it for a while, and someone, a friend, asked me to do it in an interview one time. But 10 years ago, and I thought, yeah, I want to bring this back. And then I rewrote it as This Love and Light. I wanted to change the lyrics.
Well, so in 1989, you released Avalon Sunset. That's got religious songs, gospel influences on it. And throughout your career, you've done spiritual songs. Mm-hmm. But you've never done a covers album, just straight yeah. gospel covers, have you?
No, not yet. No.
Well, you're going to put that on your list of things to do, I hope.
Yeah, I'm going to write it down right now.
Okay. All right. Well, you probably, I was going to say, so my favorite song, for what it's worth, on the album is Come On In, the Washboard Sam thing. Do you recall when you first heard that?
I can't recall when I first heard it, but I went through a lot of his tracks. And that's the one I picked because it was just lent itself to the whole vibe.
Oh, absolutely. And what is that line about? Is it putting on or taking off underwear? I can't remember. But
keep on your underwear, I think it is, isn't it?
That's a good line.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, we got your version of Greenback Dollar. That's got sax on that, and that's you playing the sax on there, right?
Yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's me.
Right. So the Moving On Skiffle album comes out on March the 10th. Are you going to be doing a touring in support of it, like a Skiffle tour?
Yeah, we're sort of building up to it gradually. So I'm doing some gigs in Europa and Belfast at the end of January, and I might be doing some in London before that. But basically, we're kind of moving into it, easing into it, and then there's more in February, and then more in March. So we're good. We're seeing how it goes, and seeing this is like kind of the launch of it, kind of thing, you know.
Right. Well, I'm hoping that's going to bring you on this side of the big pond that we'll see in the States.
Well, I hope we can get to do it over there. If it's still popular by then, or still in the frame.
Well, the second single off Moving On Skiffle that's available now is your version of the Hank Snow tune, I'm Moving On. Big hit for Snow back in 1950, and hit for a number of other folks, Ray Charles, Matt Lucas, Don Gibson, who you also do a Don Gibson tune on I'm Moving On, the version of Oh Lonesome Me.
Yeah.
So Rolling Stones also cover this song. Is there a particular skiffle version of the tune that you drew inspiration from?
No, I just thought it was great tune today.
Do you recall the first time you heard it, or whose version you heard it?
Don Gibson. Don Gibson was the first version, early 60s.
Yeah, that is a good one. Well, I see here, though this isn't really, I was just kind of wondering in general, when did you write like your first song? Right? So you did skiffle things and you didn't get involved in show bands, but when were you actually wanting to write songs? When did you first start writing your own compositions?
Well, I first song I wrote was probably 1962. I'd written one song, and we were in Germany, and we were rehearsing, and one of the guys in the band said to me, why don't we do that song that you wrote? Because I wasn't planning on it. And I said, okay, well, so, and I played it for him, and he said, well, let's do that. So that was the first song I wrote, and then beginning of the following year, I wrote another couple. So I started getting into writing gradually. Didn't happen all at once.
And so as you were writing the songs, you were encouraged to keep going because the guys in the band wanted you to play them, or you were getting audience reception, or?
That was in that band. But then when I got back, and then I started the blues club. I came back from Germany, and then I was in a show band for a while with some of my friends. And then I booked this club to start a rhythm and blues club. So that's when I wrote another one when I was with the show band, which ended up on it. So the second song I wrote ended up on an album, Them Again. It was called Coogee Woochoo. That was the second song I wrote. And I wrote that when I was playing with the Manhattan show band. Then the third one I wrote was Gloria. When I started the R&B club, that was the third song I wrote.
What was the first song?
The first song was called Some Sunny Day. It was a country song.
Have you ever recorded that?
Yeah, I've recorded it, but it's not released yet.
Oh, okay. Because I recall Could You, Would You, and yeah, for Gloria.
Yeah.
One last question here. like Burt Burns, you dealt with him in the as a producer there in the UK, and then you dealt with him later on.
Yeah.
He seems like a larger than life character, and you've probably seen both the good and the bad in him.
Yeah.
What did you like about him? And then what did you sort of weren't so keen about him?
Well, did you see the documentary?
Yeah, I did. I did. And I read that book. What is it? The Dark Soul of Burt Burns.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was fine when he was a producer, and when I knew him in the UK, and then later on, seemed like he was under a lot of pressure. So the business situation with him didn't really work out. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Because that was there were a lot of people surrounding him, you know, that were doing, you know, the stuff that I didn't, you know, I knew nothing about business, you know, I didn't know anything. I was just totally naive about any kind of business. And also, there were a lot of people manipulating the situation behind the scenes also.
Now, when you first dealt with him, he was coming in as a producer and as a songwriter. And how did he deal with the group? I mean, did he recognized your potential for songwriting pretty soon, early on, didn't he?
He was pretty good with dealing with the group. He was, you know, he was really good. He was a real producer. You know, he was like one of the old style producers, like Jerry Wexler and Ahmet and these people. He was a real producer. There are no like real producers left, I don't think. But so he taught me how to produce. So basically, I learned it from him. So the thing about it was that he spread himself very thin. I mean, I didn't even know until later that he was writing all the time, and he'd written a lot of jazz with this guy, Ray Passman, who worked in the office that I was interfacing with quite a bit. I spoke to Ray Passman later on. In fact, about 10 years ago, he's passed away, I think not.
Okay.
But him and Burt together wrote all these jazz songs that were jazz. And I didn't even know that Burt was into that at all. So the guy was like doing so many things. So that explained why he was so stressed.
Yeah. And of course, that wound up taking a toll on his heart, which wasn't very strong to begin with.
No, I didn't know either. I didn't know that either until afterwards.
Well, hey, Van, thank you so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. And as promised, here's I'm Moving On. Off the upcoming album, Moving On Skiffle, it's Van Morrison in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
I warned you, baby, from time to time, but you just wouldn't listen. Don't pay me no mind, so I'm moving on.
Keep moving on.
Oh, I'm rolling on.
Roll on.
You're broken, you're bound, that's all over now, and I'm moving. Biggie wheel going down the track. Say your true love that he ain't coming back. So I'm moving on.
Keep moving on.
Rolling on.
Roll off, roll off.
Fly too high to a mileage car. And I'm moving on.
Moving on.
Someday, baby, when you had your play, want your daddy, but your daddy will say he's moving on.
Keep moving on.
Oh, he's rolling on.
Roll off, roll off.
With some of I'm Moving On, that's Van Morrison here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Song done first by Hank Snow. And Van's version is available now as a single and will also be included on his upcoming album due out March the 10th titled Moving On Skiffle. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Van for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. David Leaf is a Peabody Award-winning author, and he's responsible for writing the seminal Beach Boys biography, The Beach Boys and the California Myth, which has been recently updated and republished as God Only Knows, The Story of Brian Wilson, The Beach Boys and the California Myth. David will tell us all about it on our next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy.
Make a big noise playing in the street.
I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.